Chapter 6. The Sisters. The Unclean Beast. As the 7 years drew on to their end, and the time approached when Jacob should know Rachel, he found he scarcely realized the truth, yet rejoiced beyond measure, and his heart beat mightily when he thought upon the hour. For Rachel was now 19 years old, and had waited for him in the purity of her blood, invulnerable through it to evil spirits and sickness which might have snatched her from her bridegroom, so that she was indeed, in respect to her bloom and beauty, all that Jacob had so tenderly prophesied. Lovely to look at beyond all the daughters of the land, with her full and yet delicate form, the soft braids of her hair, the thick nostrils of her little nose, the sweet, short-sighted gaze of her slanting eyes, and the friendly night that rested in their depths. Lovely above all, in the smiling way the upper lip lay upon the lower, and shaped the inexpressible charm of the corner of her mouth. Yes, lovely was she beyond all others. But if I say, as Jacob always said to himself, that she was lovely most of all before Leah, that does not mean that Leah was uglier than any other maiden, but merely that she was the nearest object of comparison, and suffered most of all next to Rachel. For it is quite possible to imagine a man, less enslaved than Jacob to that single point of view, who might have preferred the elder daughter, despite the stupid gaze and the tenderness of her blue eyes, and the trick she had, both proud and bitter, of dropping the lids over their squinting stare. For Leah's rich blonde hair hung knotted in her neck, and she had the figure of a fruitful woman, ripe for motherhood. Much might be said in praise of Rachel that she did not vaunt her own charms above her sister's, or take undue advantage of her lovely little face, the image and likeness of the full moon, as Leah's might be of the waning one. Rachel was not so untaught as not to reverence the latter in right of its condition, and indeed at the bottom of her heart she disapproved of Jacob that he so utterly rejected the thought of her sister and turned the brightness of his sole regard upon her, even though she could not quite put out of her heart all feminine satisfaction in his preference. The nuptial feast was set for the full moon of the summer solstice, and Rachel, too, confessed that she longed for the coming of the festal day. Yet in the weeks just before, she had been sad, weeping silently on Jacob's shoulder and against his cheek, answering his anxious query only by a painful smile and a quick headshake that dashed the tears from her eyes. What weighed upon her heart? Jacob did not know. Yet often he himself felt sad as well. Was she mourning over her maidenhead, since now the time of her blossoming drew to an end, when she should become a fruit-bearing tree? Such is the sadness inseparable from life, yet not from joy. And Jacob knew it too. For the day of high marriage is the day of death and a feast of the solstice. The moon climbs to her height, and from then on turns her face again to the sun, into which she will sink. Jacob was to know her whom he loved and begin to die. For from then on he would not stand alone, living for himself and as lord of the world. He would be dissolved into his sons, and in his person belong to death. Yet he would love them, they who became the bearers of his divided and diverse lives, because it was himself which consciously he had poured into Rachel's womb. At this time he had a dream, which he remembered long on account of its strange mood of peaceful sadness. He dreamed it on a warm night of Tammuz, in the meadows by his flocks, when the moon's sickle stood facing left in the sky, which at its fullness should usher in the marriage feast. But in the dream he was still upon his flight from home, or another flight, driven once more to ride into the red waste, and as before, a jackal trotted before him, prick-eared, dog-headed, with tail held stiffly out behind him, looked round and laughed. It was a repetition of reality, yet the same reality, recurring to work itself out since the first time it had been left incomplete. He was riding among loose boulders and dry shrubbery. Naught else grew. The evil one wound among rock and bushes, appearing, disappearing, looking round. Once, when he had vanished, Jacob blinked. When he looked again, the creature sat in front of him on a stone, and was an animal still as to the head, the usual dog's head, with sharp upstanding ears and a projecting snout, whose mouth ran right round to them. But his body was human, down to the slightly dusty toes, and pleasant to look on, like the body of a slender youth. He sat on the piece of rock in a careless posture. One leg was drawn up, and he leaned with his elbow upon that thigh, so that a fold came across his abdomen. The other was stretched out before him sidewise, the ankle on the ground. This limb, the delicate knee, the long, fine-sinewed, slightly curving leg, was a most pleasant sight. But a fell, the color of yellow clay, began on the slender shoulders, the upper back and breast of the god, merging into the dog's head with the wide jaws and crafty little eyes, which suited the body so ill, was so painful a humiliation of it, that one could only say how lovely without it that body might have been. As Jacob rode up, he got a strong whiff of the pungent odor which, sad to say, the boy jackal exhaled. And how sad and strange at once it was to see the figure open its wide jaws and address itself to speech in a laboring, throaty voice. Up, Uat! Up, Uat! It hath no need, son of Osiris, that thou troublest thyself, Jacob said. Thou art Anubis, guide and opener of the way, as well I know, and I had marveled not to meet thee here.
It was a blunder, said the god.
What meanest thou? Asked Jacob.
They were in error, the other said in his difficult speech. They who begot me, the Lord of the West, and my mother, Nephthys.
I am sad to hear it, said Jacob. But relate to me how it fell out.
She should not have been my mother, responded the youth, gradually learning to manage his jaws in speech. She was the wrong one. The darkness was to blame. She is a cow. It is all one to her. She wears the disk of the sun between her horns, in sign that now and again the sun goes in unto her to beget with her the young day. But the bearing of so many radiant suns has made no abatement in her dull indifference.
I seek to understand, Jacob said, that that might be a danger.
Very dangerous, agreed the other, nodding. Blindly, in all the good-natured warmth of her cowishness, she embraces all that comes to her, and dully passive lets it come to pass, though it happen only on account of the dark.
That is an evil, said Jacob. But which had been the right one, then, if Nephthys were not she?
Dost thou not know? Asked the jackal youth.
I cannot precisely distinguish, Jacob answered, between that which thou tellest me and that which I know of myself.
If thou knowest it not, the other responded, then I could not tell thee. In the beginning, not quite in the beginning, but nearly so, there were Geb and Nut, the earth god and the heaven goddess. They had four children, Osiris, Set, Isis, and Nephthys. But Isis was the sister bride of Osiris, and Nephthys of Set the Red.
So much is clear, said Jacob. And then these four did not keep the arrangement clearly enough in mind?
Alas, no, responded Anubis. Two of them did not. What wouldst thou? For we are feckless beings, heedless and distracted from birth onwards. Carefulness and foresight are base earthly characteristics. Whereas, what all has not carefreeness been the cause of in this life?
It is but too true, Jacob confirmed. One must take care, for to speak openly, it dependeth on the fact that ye are all idols. God knoweth always what he willeth and doeth. He promiseth and keepeth to his word. He setteth up a bond, and is true unto eternity.
What God?
Asked Anubis. But Jacob answered him, Thou feignest. When earth and heaven mingle, then indeed come forth heroes and great kings, but no God, neither four nor one.
Geb and Nut, thou hast thyself said it, were not quite the beginning.
Whence came they?
Out of Tefnut, the great mother, came the prompt reply from the stone.
Good, thou sayest it because I know it, Jacob went on in his dream. But was Tefnut the beginning? Whence came Tefnut?
The secret, the unbegotten one, whose name is Nun. He called her, responded Anubis.
I ask thee not his name, said Jacob. But now thou beginnest to speak sensibly, boy dog. I had no intent to reason with thee. After all, thou art an idol. Relate to me of thy parents' error.
The darkness was to blame, repeated the evil-smelling one. And he that carrieth the scourge and the shepherd's crook, he was carefree and distraught, and in his majesty he sought for Isis, his sister bride, and by mistake he came in the night upon Nephthys, sister of the Red One. Thus she received that great god, thinking he was her bridegroom, and they were both enfolded in the utter unconcern of the night of love.
Can such things come to pass? Cried Jacob.
With ease, answered the other, for in its unconcern night knoweth the truth, and in her eyes the lively prepossessions of the daylight are as naught. For one woman's body is like another's, good to love, good to beget upon. Only the countenance distinguishes one from another, and is the cause of our choosing one and not another. For the countenance is of the day, full of living fancies, but before the night that knows the truth, it is as nothing.
Thou speakest crudely and without feeling, said Jacob, greatly disquiet. One may have ground to speak thus, when one hath a head like to thine, and a face which one must cover up only to be able to say that thy leg is pretty and well favored as it lies stretched out before thee. Anubis looked down, drew his leg in beside the other one, and put his hands between his knees.
Leave me out, said he. I shall one day be rid of my head, too. Wouldst thou hear the rest of the tale?
What happened? Asked Jacob.
In that night, went on the other, the Lord Osiris was for Nephthys, like Set the Red, her lord, and she for Osiris, like to the lady Isis, for he was on begetting bent, and she on conceiving, and to the night naught else was of importance, and they delighted one another in begetting and conceiving, for thinking to love each other they could but beget. Then was that goddess pregnant with me, whereas it should have been Isis, the true wife.
Sad, Jacob said.
When morning came, they parted in great haste. Yet might all have been well, had not the god left behind with Nephthys the lotus garland that he wears. Set the Red found it, and roared aloud. Since that time he seeketh Osiris's life.
As thou tellest it, so I know it, said Jacob. Then came the affair with the chest, into which the Red One lured his brother, and slew him by its means, so that Osiris, the dead lord, swam downstream into the sea in the sealed-up chest.
And Set became king of all his lands, and sat upon the throne of Geb, concluded Anubis. But it is not that upon which I would dwell, or which gives this dream of thine its point. For the Red One was not for long king of the lands, for Isis gave birth to the youth Horus, who slew him. And lo, as Isis went searching and bewailing through the world after her lost and murdered lord, and cried unceasingly, Come into thy house, come into thy house, beloved, O beautiful child, come into thy house, there stood beside her Nephthys, wife of his murderer, whom the slain god had in his error embraced, and went beside her whither she went, and they agreed together in their grief, and mourned together, O thou whose heart beats no more, O Lord of beauty, thee I would fain behold.
That was sad and friendly, said Jacob.
And that, responded the other from his stone, is the meaning of the dream. For who else was with her and aided her in her search, her roving and her wailing, then as well as later, when Set found the discovered and rehidden corpse and cut it up into 14 pieces, which then Isis must seek anew? Who but I, Anubis, son of the unlawful wife, fruit of the murdered one, who was ever at Isis's side in her erring and seeking? And as she wandered, she laid her arm about my neck that she might lean upon me, and we lamented together, Where art thou, thou left arm of my beautiful god? Where shoulder blade and foot of his right side? Where art thou, lovely head and holy sex, which it seemeth is irreparably lost, so that we are fain to replace it with an image made of sycamore wood?
Thou speakest obscenely, said Jacob, and like to the death god of the two countries.
But Anubis replied, And thou, where thou standest, should have more understanding for such matters, for thou art a bridegroom, and shall beget and die. For in the sex is death, and in death sex, that is the miracle of the grave chamber, and sex teareth the bonds of death, and standeth up against death, as it happened to the Lord Osiris, above whom Anubis hovered as a female vulture, and made his seed flow out of the dead, and cohabited with him even as she mourned.